Well, welcome to Talking. Jill DeHaan is here to talk about her passion for preparing, eating, and sharing foods that nourish the body. And so we also hope that she'll talk to us about her book, which is
Starting Fresh.
Starting Fresh.
Thank you so much for having me. Oh, I really appreciate this.
Glad to have you. Your story and your beautiful book are something that I think folks in Chapel Hill are going to want to know more about. So I love your motto, which is combine fresh food, great taste, and love.
Yes, a little bit of love goes a long way.
Now, where does that come from?
Well, I have three children. I have three cats and a dog and a husband. And so we have a lot of love, yeah.
Well, the story of how you came to write a cookbook is an interesting story. You want to talk about that, or you want to talk about the cookbook itself and some of the exciting recipes that you've got in there?
Well, hopefully we have time to talk about both.
We got time to talk about both. I'm just looking at some nice food that you've prepared. Tell us the story of how the cookbook came into being, and then we'll talk some about the cookbook itself.
Okay, great. Well, I was an accountant. I am an accountant, and I worked in London and lived in London for about 17 years. And after my third son was born, I decided to give up my job because it was kind of crazy trying to hold a full-time job and three small kids. And my neighbor down the road in our little village said to me, "What are you going to do after you quit?" And I said, "I don't know." And she said, "Well, will you teach my friends and I in the village to cook some of the nice food you've been cooking?" So I'd never been to a cooking class, and I thought, okay, I'll give it a whirl. And so I basically started teaching cooking classes in the village. And it kind of grew from there. And then we moved to the States about 10 years ago with my husband's job. And when I moved here, people asked me what I did, and I said, "Well, I was an accountant. But more recently, I was teaching cooking." And so they said, "Oh, great. We don't know how to cook. We'll invite the friends. We'll buy the wine. You get the food, and you can teach us how to cook."
No.
It was a great way to meet people. And through that, I then wrote a cookbook for the school my kids were at, which basically raised money for the arts. So that was a fantastic, fun thing to do. And they were all my recipes that I had been teaching the school community how to make and raising money for the school. And so it was just a great way to kind of connect with people. Mm-hmm. And then I met, through one of my cooking classes, this wonderful woman, Leslie Rindox, who is a small publisher out of Davidson. And she was very interested in terms of working out how we could get a cookbook together. And so we started with a cookbook. But during the cookbook, when it first started, it was going to be an AGA cookbook, which is basically an old-fashioned stove which runs pretty much out of gas. Mm. And they have them in England. I had one in England, and I had one up in the mountains, and I taught down in Charlotte, at a store down there too. But so it was going to be an AGA cookbook, but there was only about 1,000 AGA owners in the whole north of America. And then what happened was, in the whole midst of that, my middle son got sick and we found out he had a rare form of kidney cancer. So it kind of threw me into a whole kind of taking my food and trying to make my food work harder, find out how I could actually make that food, you know, work for him, help his health, and really help all of us. And so the cookbook just kind of came and had a life of its own. It didn't really have a plan. It just kind of evolved, and it came into what it is, which is to try to, you know, help everybody, not just people with cancer, and not just people with heart disease, but really everybody, to kind of feel better and just, you know, enjoy the food, but feel good with it afterwards.
Well, I think you've answered part of the question, but it is how. You know, we got a million cookbooks.
Yeah.
And great recipes in all of them.
There are.
What's the case for the new cookbook and focusing on, you mentioned that your son had cancer,
mm-hmm.
and that part of this at least is directed towards healthy living and cancer attacking food. Is that basically what it's about?
Well, no, it's bigger than that, I think. I work for Earth Fare, and I teach cooking classes for Earth Fare. And a lot of people that come in want to cook. They're just not sure how. It's confusing. There's so many health ideas out there that people kind of almost shut down, I think, because it just becomes too much and overwhelming. So my cookbook has small amounts of recipes, small amounts of ingredients. It has easy preparation, and it really feels approachable, and that's what I wanted with the cookbook, so that everybody could do it, people that are novices in the kitchen and people that are used to cooking.
Well, give us an illustration. Just say in cooking, I loved the baked chicken recipe, which is not complicated, not that much different from what, but there are a few little different different ways or different ingredients and different techniques.
Well,
can
this
you remember
one is
about
a,
that?
Oh, yes, yeah. This is a very popular recipe. A lot of people that have had the cookbook over the last couple months have been doing this. It's kind of a one-pot meal, and you put little new potatoes, and you put some artichoke hearts in there and some rosemary, and you kind of marinate it in little white wine, little oregano,
what do you mean
little
you
garlic.
Put it in it?
Well, you kind of put it all in a big pan, pour the marinade over and kind of leave it to marinate, and then you just take it out and just put it in the oven and bake it, and then you have your whole dinner kind of in one pan.
So you marinate all the vegetables too?
Mm-hmm. The new potatoes and the artichokes
and
too.
And then you don't bake them and then you take them out of the
No, you
bowl.
Don't take them out. You just leave them all
in
there.
Leave them in the same pan.
Yeah, you just put them in a roasting pan and just bake the whole
so
thing.
So it's two things. You pour the marinade on the assembled chicken and vegetables
and
all
and
of
new,
that.
New potatoes.
Put it in the refrigerator, then take it out and put it in the oven, cook it, and then eat it.
Yes.
It's sort of simple. Now, but I remember something about rubbing salt on the chicken.
Oh, yeah, that helps a lot because it kind of gives you that nice
but
crispy
that's a
skin.
That's a third step.
Well, I guess, yeah, you need to rub the salt on there before, but basically it gives that chicken a really nice crispy thing.
So for somebody, let's just try to do this. For somebody who's not going to even look at your website or your blog or your book.
Okay.
Can you just tell us how to cook this chicken? It sounded pretty simple, and that is I take the chicken.
Okay. Take it out of the fridge.
Take the innards out.
If you like really, really crispy chicken and you have time, you know, a day to prepare, you can, or a night before, you can rub a little bit of salt on the outside of the skin.
Okay, we've either done that or haven't.
And haven't done that.
Okay, so now I've got my chicken, I've got my new potatoes and some artichokes. And all I do is just
put it in a roasting pan or a pan that you want to cook, bake in the oven, and then you just mix your marinade together. So you mix.
Okay, is it simple to do that?
You can mix it with a fork. Yes.
Okay. What's in it though?
It's basically white wine vinegar and white wine and oregano and rosemary and garlic and a little bit of lemon.
Something, and it could vary if we kept
Definitely.
Forgot the others.
And Nobody
pour,
is going
does
to know.
It have to cover the chicken.
It has to. You just pour it over the chicken, and it kind of comes up about halfway onto the chicken.
Okay, and leave it in the rest.
And
in
leave
the
it in the fridge for
overnight.
Yeah, but I have done this in the afternoon. If you're short on time and you do not have the overnight, it works just as well overnight. You know, in the afternoon.
Well, if we give our listeners anything else, we're going to give them the opportunity to cut off the radio and go fix chicken.
They got to
go buy the chicken.
Yes.
They got to go buy the chicken. I guess they've got to do that. All right. I love that. What would be your family's favorite? Is this your family's favorite recipe?
This is probably one of them. I think that my family loves the chicken in a scrunch pie.
Pie. It's got to be a pastry?
Well, you buy phyllo pastry, but a lot of people are scared.
What is a phyllo pastry?
It's just basically, it's Mediterranean, and it's my husband's Lebanese, but it's Mediterranean. It's just basically flour and water and in very thin sheets. And it's usually, people think of it as really fiddly, but because you have to layer it and you have to put a lot of butter and stuff in between.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I don't understand what this fiddly pastry is.
Phyllo pastry.
I've got to go to the Mediterranean deli here to buy
you can find it at any supermarket. You just buy it at any supermarket and you just take it out of it's frozen usually, so you have to thaw it out. Do not put it in the microwave, otherwise you will end up with a gummy mess all over and you will think you never want to deal with phyllo again. So you just let it thaw out room temperature about 30 minutes or in your refrigerator, and then you just unroll it, and the sheets, you'll see they're big sheets by about 9 by 11. And you just literally lay those sheets in the bottom of a pan a roasting pan.
Just one of them?
No, they're really, really thin. They're about paper thin, so you probably want to lay about 4 or 5 of them so that they'll be strong enough to hold your filling. And then you just you can rub a little bit of coconut oil in the middle of them if you want, which is great for your skin and your brain, and they're finding all great things about coconut oil.
We'll talk some more about coconut oil in a minute.
Yeah, and then you put it in the oven and bake it at about 375 and just watch it. It only takes about 4 or 5 minutes to cook. So it doesn't take long at all.
So that's all there is to it?
And then it'll get really crispy. And then you just take it out. And then if you have any of leftover roast chicken from the night before, or if you just have some vegetables like spinach, I use spinach and sun-dried tomatoes and a little bit of, they have lovely local goat's cheese here, which I love, and onion. And you just mix it all together and put it on top of the pastry and cut it into squares. And you're finished.
Well, we're visiting with Jill DeHaan about her new cookbook, Starting Fresh. She and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Jill DeHaan, and we're talking about her new cookbook, Starting Fresh. It's not just a cookbook. It's a lot of recipes, but it's more about your family and your life and what you all have learned. And so I want you to tell us your story. Where'd you come from? You came from England to here.
We came from California originally.
Where were you born?
I was born in California.
Okay.
But kind of lived all over the states. I lived in Pennsylvania, Minnesota,
Why'd
Chicago,
you move around a lot?
My father's job.
And what was he about?
He was into boxes. Into corrugated boxes.
Is that so, right? Yeah, well, so. And it never took him down south.
We make a lot of
paper and boxes down here.
And so you
got to know everything. All right, now you lived in England for a while.
Yes, for about 17 years. Actually, the longest I'd ever lived anywhere.
And it's you. I don't know why. This is just a. Did you marry somebody who took you to?
No. I graduated from university, and my friend and I decided that we really didn't want to get serious jobs. We wanted to travel and see the world, but we weren't fluent in any language, and so we decided England would be a good place to go. And so we decided to go over there for 6 months, and then my 6 months basically became 17 years.
Why? What is it about England that made you want to stay there?
It was just such a melting pot of people from all over the world. It was so easy to travel places. I just met so many fantastic people. It was just a great place to travel and work.
How did you get into cooking?
Well, I'd always cooked with my mother and my grandmothers and everything. They were big cooks, so I'd always.
And
cooked.
What was your family's cooking tradition? Just all American?
Oh yes,
from the grocery store.
Pretty much from the grocery store. We had a big thing at Christmas. We'd always make a bunch of Christmas cookies, which was fantastic and very a lot of fun. A big mess in the kitchen, but that was great. And then my grandmother cooked, and she cooked every night. I mean, they cooked every night, pretty much dinner, family dinner. So.
And did you do this? Did you do this with them because you're a good old American girl, just learning, or you loved your grandmother,
No, I loved my family, my grandmother, but it was just so fun. I think a lot of young girls like to bake, so that was my big thing. I like to bake brownies and cookies and all those kinds of things.
And then you came to England. What happened to you in England?
Well, I was working as an accountant over there. And just traveling around, I lived with a bunch of New Zealanders and Australians, and we just had a fantastic time, became lifelong friends. And then I met my husband through this job I was working at, and he's
from
Lebanon.
So was he a client? Was he a client? Or
no, he was a consultant at the place I was working. And so we just then went and we ended up, you know, getting married. And
well, tell us about your husband and how he happened to come from Lebanon to England.
Well, because of the war, he had come.
He had to get out. He was part of one of the warring communities.
There was warring all around him. Yes, and they'd shut down the schools, and they hadn't gone to school for a couple of years, and so his mother needed to get.
So he came as a young person.
Then. He was about 12. Yeah, he was about 12 years old. So.
So he identified more with. Maybe with England then.
He's quite Lebanese.
Is he really?
He loves at boarding school. He and his friend, who was Syrian, would go out and get a couple rabbits and then stick up a little barbecue in the back and kind of grill them up if they didn't like what they were offering at the school. So he's pretty Lebanese.
All right, now this is don't jump on me about this, but I saw no goat meat recipes in here at all.
No goat meat recipes. There is one lamb recipe in there, and I love lamb. But this was supposed to be a cookbook, or this is a cookbook that kind of is supposed to appeal to a lot of people. And lamb is sometimes off-putting to people. So I was trying to stress not too much red meat in this cookbook. So it has more chicken, more fish, more vegetables. In terms of this cookbook was supposed to be really representative of how people should eat.
Well, let's talk about the different influences. And we've talked some about your mother and grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And we've said that the Lebanese, I haven't gotten the Lebanese influence is not with goat.
No.
And only a touch with lamb, a lot with vegetables maybe,
hummus. There's a lot with mezes and stuff, yeah. I mean,
you give him credit for that?
Yes. I'd never had tabbouleh before. I'd never had fattoush. I'd never had any of those lovely things. So.
Well, how receptive are Americans to Lebanese and Mediterranean cooking?
Well, I think they're very receptive because the Mediterranean diet has gotten such great, you know, health benefits and touted everywhere as, you know, solving all your problems. Get on the Mediterranean diet and down some olive oil and you'll feel much better. So I think people are very receptive to it. I think, no, goat, not so receptive, but yes, hummus and tabbouleh, yes.
The other influence in your cookbook is what you learned teaching people. When you and your husband moved you back to the United States and him to the United States, you told us earlier that you started teaching cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you learn working for a grocery store, a very, you know, an upscale, good grocery chain? What did you learn about cooking that you didn't know before that's made its way to the book?
Well, I was just shocked at how nobody cooked at home. I was shocked about how much people went out, how much, especially coming from England, because when in England, everybody cooked. Everybody cooked in the evenings, most evenings. You might go out once or twice a week, but you would never go out six or seven nights a week. And when I moved here, nobody cooked. And they didn't cook for their children. They didn't cook for themselves. And they relied on other people to cook for them. And I think that's, first of all, I think you're really missing out. And I think also it's dangerous to put somebody else in charge of the food that you're eating.
So part of your motivation is to persuade people like me that I can cook a chicken.
Yes,
or
definitely.
Make hummus.
Yes, definitely.
Or what else? What else would be your sales pitches for, hey, DG, you can cook.
Well,
turn to page such and such, and this is one you can really do.
I mean, because what I tell people is I say, you know, because we've done a lot of going around to the different supermarkets and talking to a lot of people, and people will say, oh, I don't cook. And I say, okay, well, can you assemble? I mean, a lot of the things don't need to be cooked, you know, in terms of some of the salads, some of the breakfast items, you know, and they taste so much better than a lot of the stuff that you buy. I think that's one of the things that I'm trying to do with this book is I had one lady that came by the supermarket the other weekend, and she said, we were telling her these chocolate almond cookies were healthy. And she said, healthy usually means nasty. And we said, they're not nasty. And when she tasted it, she was like, oh, this is healthy that doesn't taste nasty. So...
Well, you know, I'm sorry to now. You've gotten me off track. I don't know whether to say you drove me or driven off track.
With the chocolate almond cookies, there.
No, it's on breakfast because I love some of the things in breakfast, and I want to start. We may have to take a break, but one of the things that jumped out at me was a granola.
Yes.
And I felt like I could do this. But. Why do you have a granola recipe when I can go out and just buy granola at any of the grocery stores where you're teaching these classes?
Yes. Well, first of all, I think this granola tastes better than most of the things that you
would
buy.
What's the secret?
The secret is it has really good, just really good ingredients in it. And nobody's trying to make a profit out of it. You're just trying to make it for your own taste and your own consumption. So you pick almonds or sunflower seeds or an oats like I do, or you could use any nuts. You could use walnuts. You could use pistachios, whatever you have on hand. And then we're using coconut oil, which has fantastic health benefits and also tastes really delicious.
Instead of butter,
instead of vegetable oil or canola oil, if you look at the ingredients on a lot of granolas, they have lesser quality, cheaper oils in them because it's more profitable for them to make it that way and easier for them to do it.
Well, we're going to come back to the making of granola, but one of the important things that I learned from your book is coconut oil.
Yes.
You're not on the payroll of the coconut oil people, but you really believe in
the coconut sugar either. No, I don't know anything to do with
it. You believe in coconut oil, and you know, I kind of had a recollection that coconut oil was not good.
Got a really bad rap, but it deserved it in some cases. I think what they were taught, what got the bad rap was the hydrogenated coconut oil. So it was the processed, overprocessed coconut oil of the 1970s, but not the extra virgin, raw, unrefined coconut oil that you find a lot in the supermarkets now.
All right, so to persuade me to use coconut oil for granola and for other things, because this is a big part of your book.
Yeah.
What is the label identifying distinction between good coconut oil and the coconut oil that might be like what I heard was not too good for you?
Well, you want to make sure it's extra virgin.
Which means what? We heard about that in olive oil, but what does it mean in coconut?
It basically has to do with the way it's processed and the way it's processed. You want it least processed, less processed. You don't want to have any kind of petroleum agents going through the processing, process. And you want it to be in the rawest form it possibly can, because that's going to be the best for your body.
And how do I know that from the label?
The label will say unrefined. It will say extra virgin.
Lots of options brand-wise?
Cold pressed. Yes. Oh, there's lots of brands. When I first started using this about 3 years ago, it was very hard. But now Trader Joe's has one that's very economical. Earth Fare has their own brand that's very economical. I mean, the prices come down a lot, and you can get it easily at lots of supermarkets.
Well, I tell you what, let's take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about granola and some more about coconut oil. We're visiting with Jill DeHunt about her book, her cookbook, Starting Fresh. She and I'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest, well, we're talking about food, and my guest is Jill DeHaan. She's got a beautiful new cookbook called Starting Fresh. She has a little bit of a different approach to this, and I'm selfishly exploiting her for my own purposes because I love breakfast, and you've given a new granola recipe. So I get my oats. That's basic. And then instead of pouring a whole bunch of oil or butter on it, I put a little bit of coconut oil.
Yes, on you don't need
and
very
then,
much.
And then a selection of nuts.
Whatever you fancy.
How do I mix this all up and cook it and bake it or get it in the oven? How do you recommend that we do that?
Well, you can either
and
do...
I want you to know, I'm going to put this to work this afternoon.
Great. Yeah, yeah. Good. No, I mean, basically what I do for simplicity so that I don't have a... Because I don't like to do a lot of washing up, so I just want one thing to wash up. I get a saucepan, put the coconut oil in the saucepan so it melts because coconut oil goes solid above or below 76 degrees and it looks very white. It's very hard. It would be hard to mix into the oats. So I put that into a saucepan, melt that gently. Then into the saucepan, I would mix the oats, the nuts, that I was going to use. Mm-hmm. And then I would put a little bit of sweetener. Now, I love the coconut sugar, which has phenomenal health benefits. Plus, it just tastes
like...
That
sugar can't have health
benefits.
Oh,
yes, it does. It's unbelievable. But even... Well, it has B2, B3, B6. It has potassium. It has zinc, which are great for your immune system. It has 16 amino acids. And it's low glycemic. But what is even better... Not better, but it, what is great about it is, hands down, it tastes better than any processed sugar,
honey. It tastes better than brown sugar.
Oh, definitely.
Maple syrup.
Oh, all of them. And the reason I know this, because I have three teenagers, and they have lots of picky friends. They have regular
so
friends
come
and picky
and
friends.
When I was developing this
cookbook, I put a whole bunch of samples out, and I did one, didn't tell them, one with maple syrup, one with brown sugar, one with white sugar.
Oh, really?
I did.
Yeah,
because I wanted to know. I wanted to know from the horse's mouth kind of what they thought. And every single child, 20 kids, marched through my kitchen that day, and they all picked the coconut sugar. And what was more, they went to school the next day, and they kept saying to my son, the memory of the food stayed in their head, and they were like, you know that one canola that we liked? Can your mom make some more of that one, please? They loved it. Really loved it.
No, that is really great. Well, talk, before we leave this coconut oil and then, coconut sugar too, idea. You're not a doctor.
No.
But why are you prescribing this for health benefits? How can you do that? I mean, what's the...
Oh, gosh, I can't prescribe. I can't make any promises.
You're telling us eat food prepared with coconut oil and you're going to be healthier. I mean,
not if you put all the processed stuff with it. What my whole cookbook, the whole premise of my cookbook is to take processed food out of the equation of what you're eating. So if you just eat coconut oil and you go and eat all the processed stuff, you're not going to feel better, okay? But if you take the processed food out of your diet and replace it with just wholesome, natural food, and then you have good oils, like all those years that I went on a medical conference up in California this last year with about 400 doctors, and they were talking about how all these people had been put on low-fat diets and they were all gaining weight because your brain runs on fat, okay? Now, it doesn't run on lard and beef fat, okay? But if you're putting avocado oil and you're putting coconut oil and you're putting olive oil and you're putting good fats into your body, your brain's going to run, your body's going to run, and you're going to feel full. You're not going to feel like you're walking around starving.
All right, let's stay with breakfast and other healthy aspects. You do something, another thing about breakfast that appealed to me, because I like spinach. And I like eggs, and I like tomatoes. And so you got some ideas about some quick breakfast. Mm-hmm. You want to share those with
yes,
us? Or are we going to have to buy your book to find out about
this? No, I'll share it with you. No. My mother loves the egg in a cup, okay? Because she likes breakfast, but she likes it fast. And this is actually the publisher's favorite recipe, too. You just take a ramekin or a little cup that is either oven-proof or microwave-proof. You put a little, whatever you've got in the fridge, you can put a little tomato, a little spinach, a little onion if you want. And then you just crack an egg over the top, and you can put it in the microwave for a minute, or you can put it in the oven for a couple minutes and just bake it with a little tiny, I put a little sprinkling of cheese over the top, and voila, you have breakfast on the run. You can even take it with you.
A healthy egg McMuffin.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
Is that,
yeah. It tastes delicious.
Just as tasty.
Yes. My mother's only complaint from the recipe is that I didn't make her two.
Well, cost-wise, say an egg costs 15 cents or something like that. Unless do you insist that we have a special kind of egg, or is it just we can get it?
Well, I think you should have an organic or free range egg. You
okay,
really
so
want
it's
to limit.
So it's going to cost a quarter.
Yes, exactly.
And then onions and a little bit of just anything, spinach?
Yes,
or
I mean, it can be leftover kind of from last night's salad or last night's dinner.
And how long does it stay in the microwave?
Oh, about a minute. It's about a minute. It doesn't take long.
And that's
than
all there is to it?
Yep. So it's actually faster than going through a drive-thru.
Well, what else for breakfast?
Oh, I love my waffles. My waffles, they're made with Greek yogurt, and they're made with coconut oil and whole wheat flour. And also, I love the banana and chocolate chip muffins that I make. I make them for my son to go out the door. Instead of using flour, you use ground oats and ground almonds, and it just has a lot of protein. One of those will last him all morning long.
How do you make it rise?
I mean, just a little bit of baking powder, but you'd be amazed. Nobody can tell that it doesn't have flour in it. And it has a lot of protein, has a lot of fiber, you know, and it's also gluten-free if you've got people that you're catering to that have dietary issues as well.
Well, what does your family eat for supper?
Oh, for dinner? We eat a lot of chicken and fish, and we eat as many vegetables. I'd like to have about at least 3 nights a week where we go vegetarian and we're not eating all that meat every single night.
Well, first, before we go completely vegetarian, talk about fish. You've got some ideas about, you have some ideas, special ideas about fish.
I do.
Well, think of one for tonight. I need to eat tonight, and I want to eat seafood. And we've got some great places to get seafood in Chapel Hill.
Okay.
So you can pick any fish, and then a simple way to cook it.
Well, it depends on if you've got fish haters or fish lovers.
Fish lovers, okay, because
I have a fish haters recipe
we'll go to that in a minute.
No, the fish lovers, well, I love it poached very simply. I mean, if you've got a fresh piece of fish, you don't want to do too much to it. So I've got a recipe in there that I made when my father had his heart attack, which is basically, it's orange, it's ginger, and it's a little white wine, and it's, you just kind of poach the fish, quite, you know, and it takes like, you know, only about, if you have a very thin piece of fish, only about 3 or 4 minutes. It doesn't take long.
So you poach it in, like I'm boiling it?
No, I just put it in a roasting pan and put the liquid over it and then just kind of cook it that way.
You put it in the oven or you cook it
Do it in a saucepan, but if you put it in, if you have a lot of it, if you have a big group, you probably want to put it in the oven.
So you're just really letting the water do the cooking.
Yes.
And
it adds a lot of flavor in there as well.
With all of those things, and then you just pull the fish out and... Mm-hmm.
And you can serve it up on a little bit of quinoa, or you can serve it up on a little bit of spinach, or whatever, you know, whatever you fancy.
So that's a 4-minute operation?
Yes.
Did you tell me that?
Yeah.
Now,
you have to buy the fish.
There was a guy I worshiped here in Chapel who had the seafood place, and he's not here anymore, but he persuaded me. Mm-hmm. This is just counter to everything you believe, but the most efficient way to preserve the full flavor of a fish and hold in the moisture is frying.
To fry it?
To fry it. Now, he conceded that might not be the healthiest way.
Okay.
Given the oils and everything else, but maybe if you fried it in coconut oil or something, you could do. But so the reason was that frying it and the crusting it, that preserved, that kept everything in the fish.
Okay.
If you poach it, there's stuff coming out into the water and into the, you're saying we're putting some stuff back in it too.
Yes, yeah, there is. Well, I mean, I would argue that if you're keeping everything in, and I like, one of my favorite recipes is cooking the whole fish, and I keep the skin on.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The skin actually keeps all the moisture in, it keeps all the nutrients in and everything as well, but you're not frying it. You haven't got the unhealthy element. So I cook a lot of fish like that with the skin on because it's more forgiving. I mean, fish, it's so easy to dry out.
How do you cook with the fish?
If I've got a fish with the skin on it, I've got a whole fish, I just open up the cavity and I throw a couple slices of lemon in there, a little bit of herbs, if I've got some herbs from my garden, and then I just put a little white wine over it or a little bit of lemon juice and just stick it in the oven and just cook it, and you won't dry it out. It will be, and you'll get all the flavor from the skin because the skins have a lot of oils in it and they'll go into the fish.
Given your notion of what's available around here almost fresh, mm-hmm. What are some of the fishes that you would recommend to us that we look for to cook in this way?
Well, I mean, you have to be careful because a lot of fish are, you know, either overfished or they have mercury, and so one of the sites I love that Monterey Aquarium Seafood Watch, and I would strongly, you know, say to you to go and look up there and see what the latest, because things are always changing all the time, and you just want to make sure that you're not, what you think you're eating that's healthy isn't actually doing you more harm. So I usually tend to look on that. I mean, I eat fish seasonally, so yeah, so like there is a season for halibut, there is a season for, you know, for scallops, there's a season for you know, lots of the different fish, and so if you eat that way, it will be less expensive and you will get better quality as well.
Well, we're visiting with and learning from Jill DeHun, talking about her new cookbook, Starting Fresh. She and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about food with an expert, Jill Dahan, who is the author or the assembler, the creator of a new book, cookbook called Starting Fresh. Cookbook is not the right word, Jill. It's more than a cookbook, isn't it?
I hope it is. I mean, what I'm trying to do is really inspire people to get in their kitchens, roll up their sleeves, and try a few things. And I have friends and people that have done it so far in the last month or two that have never been in the kitchen. And to me, they picked some of the hardest recipes out of the book. I thought, oh my gosh, what have you picked? And they loved it. It worked out brilliantly, and they've made it three or four times, and they really enjoyed the whole experience. And that's what I'm really trying to help people.
Now, but you said there are no hard recipes, right?
No, but there's ones that are more difficult and more challenging than the others. Uh-huh. And I was surprised at, you know, one of the ones my friend picked. But she found it very easy, and so I was very glad.
What can you remember what it was?
Oh, yeah, I can. Yeah. It's one of my favorites, actually. It's a tomato filo roulade.
Uh-huh.
And so it's the whole rolling of the whole thing that sometimes scares people.
Well, why do you have to roll for a roulade?
Roulade means like roll, uh-huh. to roll. And so what you do is you take the filo pastry that I was talking to you before, but instead of cooking
this
it.
For those of you joining us late, this is a thin pastry that's kind of new, but now available pretty widely.
Oh, very widely,
yes. And so you use several sheets of it.
Several sheets of it. You put about five sheets out. And then you cook a mixture of onions and tomatoes and a little balsamic vinegar. And so it's very flavorful. And you spread that, almost like you're icing a cake, uh-huh, over, uh-huh, the pastry.
Yeah, I love this already. Okay.
And then you put a couple more sheets of the pastry on. And then you either buy, or I like to make my own pesto within the blender, just throw some basil and some, mm-hmm, spinach, mm-hmm, and some garlic and nuts
sprinkle
in there.
On top,
and then you just sprinkle that on top, and then you, mm-hmm, just fold in the ends and then start rolling. You know,
uh-huh,
like,
okay,
you would roll,
right,
up,
so
kind of a newspaper.
So once you roll it, once you got it rolled, you cook the whole thing rolled up?
You cook the whole thing rolled up. You just want to make sure that after you roll it up, it's on the thing you want to cook it on. Because if you try to move it, then it gets a little precarious.
You can't lift it up. It's
well, it can break in the middle. Yeah, and you can kind of, if that happens to you, it's, there's no problem. I've done that before. And that's, you just get another piece of filo, because they, uh-huh, give you a million pieces of filo pastry. Get another filo pastry and just drape it
make
over.
Make it as a bandage.
Exactly.
Or
it's,
yeah,
a big old filo bandage, and put that on there. And it works really well.
The one thing that I've learned, or that I believe now on recent experience, is that you can make a lot of stuff taste good if you soften up some onions in the pan, mm, and then throw a bunch of tomatoes on there and stir, mm, it up. It's hard to mess. I mean, that can make...
You really can't. You can't
that's
that
why
up.
We like okra so much, is that we cover our okra with,
yeah,
this kind of ingredient. So you roll it up in the special pastry, mm-hmm, and then put it in the oven and bake it.
And
is
bake
that right?
It, yeah, for about 30 minutes.
And then how do you eat it? Do you cut
and
it
then
up?
You cut it across into, uh-huh, slices.
Like slices of bread maybe? Or
yeah, you cut it across, but you'll have all the different layers in there, and it looks beautiful. And it's I have lots of friends who even don't like vegetables, and they absolutely love this.
You told us earlier on that one of the motivating factors for your book was your son, who has cancer, and that that you came to believe that eating healthy could be helpful to him. Tell,
yeah,
us how that's going.
Well, I think it kind of even started before him. What happened was my older son got a very bad case of acne, and we were told by many dermatologists that the only way that it could be solved was a very powerful drug. And he and I didn't like the sound of that. There was some depression, some issues with that. We didn't want to go there. He was about 15. So I read an article in a paper that I was getting from England that talked about how sugar and dairy can activate that in your skin. So I convinced him, or he actually decided that he would give it up for a month. And within 2 weeks, he was completely clear.
Just from stopping eating
something.
So you had to provide substitutes for him.
Yes, and so I made up a lot of the recipes that are in the book through doing that, too. Because, you know, I wanted to make him a treat, so I wanted to make him a cookie. But I didn't want to use processed sugars, so I used sunflower butter. You know, I used oats. I used really flavorful ingredients that could kind of taste good, give him a lot of energy, and make him feel like he was having a treat without having all
that stuff. How's he doing?
Oh, wonderfully, wonderfully. It was wonderful, because not only did it actually solve all the skin, but his grades improved. It was unbelievable. And then when my middle son got sick, I felt deep down inside me that what I needed to help him was his immune system. And to make your immune system, mm-hmm, better, you need to, you know, help feed it well and keep yourself healthy. And so I just did a lot of research into different foods and combinations, but I didn't want to go into the weird and wonderful aisle. So I've tried to keep it, and the, mm-hmm, with the book too, so that you don't have to look
to me. Did he buy into this?
Oh, no. No.
He didn't?
He was 14. No.
Oh.
There's not much of a buy-in with a 14-year-old. A little bit, but, you know, most of the time was, why do we have to eat healthy food when all my friends get to eat all this junk?
Oh, gosh.
So, but you know what? He and my other son, I have a younger son too, Now they can see the results on their skin. They actually, they feel better, and they do, I mean, they still fight me, you know, for why do we have to have healthy all the time? But they do know, they do see the benefits of eating healthy.
That's great. Now, you brought me something.
I did.
And you said I had to test. We've talked about breakfast. We talked about dinner. We have not talked too much about dessert, except in the context of you're fixing these these cookies that your son could eat and not have his face explode.
Yes. Well, I love dessert. I like sweets. But I did notice a couple of years ago, you know, you go those sugar highs, sugar lows. It's the 4 o'clock bus time, and all you want to do is lay down in your car and have a nap, which doesn't really work. So I think that sugar is a huge, huge problem in American society and actually all over the world, really, in a lot of Western societies. So, but I still want to have some nice sweet treats. I want to serve desserts to my family and just not be completely dessertless. So my cookbook has no processed sugars in it. It has, it's using things like mango, it's using avocado, it's used dates, it uses figs, it uses coconut sugar, which I think I mentioned mm-hmm, before. Mm-hmm. And so these treats here, I love ginger cookies. And every time I went to buy a ginger cookie, if I looked at the ingredients, sugar was at the top of the ingredient list, which means very high in terms
of
how much is in there.
So ginger snaps that I buy in the package is bad.
Yeah, well, you think the ginger is good, but when you look at actually the ingredient and what's in it, it's not so great. Yeah. So my idea was to devise a ginger cookie that was good for you, that I could eat, you know, practically a whole packet and still feel okay. And so so these are two different recipes here. I've been trying them out on my friends the last couple of weeks. I'm going to put them on my website tomorrow with the whole kind of Christmas holidays. I want people to be able to make gingerbread men, but be able to make them healthy.
Oh, well.
And so there's one here on the left. This one has a few snowdrops on it. It's, I know, before snow, but this has a few. I just took a little bit of white chocolate and kind of shaved it over that one. And this one, these are two different things. You have to taste them and tell me what you think.
Now, before we once I get into tasting, it's all over. But you mentioned your website. Tell us about how to get to your website
That
if somebody wants to follow up. There's a lot of, if you can't afford to buy the book, there's a lot of stuff on the website. And we think it'll probably encourage you to go out and find the book.
Yeah, I mean, my whole idea is I'd love to inspire people. So my website is www.jilldahan.com.
Okay, J-I-L-L-D-A-H-A-N.
Yes, .com. And I have recipes on there. And also, just a little bit about the book. It's available at Earth Fair. It's available at McIntyre's here bookstore. And it's available at Southern Seasons. And the proceeds of the book are going to Boston Children's Hospital to do just for me to pay back a little bit of all the things they've done for my son.
Wow. All right. Well, now, all right. Which one you want me to taste first?
Well, hopefully you'll taste both and tell me. Right. This one over here. All okay. Right. Maybe should I tell you or should you just taste it first?
All right. I'll taste it and then you tell me whether or not I missed it or not.
Okay.
I can taste like ginger.
There's ginger in it. Yeah.
And it's crunchy.
And now, do you like soft ginger snaps or do you like them hard?
Well, I like everything.
Okay. Oh, you're
I
easy.
I like this a lot.
Okay.
And I'm not sure why, but it's got some crunchy stuff other than the
It's made with almonds.
It's got the
almonds.
So it has
no flour. It has no flour. So these are great because I make these for my son when he's going out the door and he doesn't have breakfast.
This has got ground up almonds for flour and then some crunchy almonds in there too?
Well, I've just taken the almonds and put them in a blender and kind of...
So some of them have gone all the way to dust. It's that is very good.
Oh, good.
All right.
Okay.
Now, what's the difference with...
All right. Well, the one you just tasted has the ginger. It has a little bit of molasses in it, a little bit of coconut sugar and cinnamon and the ground almonds. And the difference, they're both the same ingredients, but this one that you, for the first one you tasted, has coconut oil in it, just a tablespoon for like 8 cookies. And this one you have here just has water in it, so it doesn't have any coconut oil
in it. So
it
doesn't have the sweetener in it, so it's...
Well, no, it has coconut sugar, but it just has a tablespoon. But there's only a tablespoon in 8 to 10 cookies, so that's really not too much sugar in there. This one has water in it instead of coconut oil.
Well, I like this. I like it for different reasons. I like both of them a lot. So I'm going to we're out of time. I'm going to have to eat several more of these to decide which one of Jill Dunn's.
Well, maybe you'll have to make them both.
Ginger cookies are better, but they're both better. Both recipes in your book?
No, they're not. These aren't in the book. These are going to be on my website.
Got to go to the website for these. Everything else that I think we talked about is in the book. And by the way, you mentioned your publisher. This is one of the most beautiful cookbooks I've ever seen with great photography, so it's fun to look at even if you're not going to take up
the photos are beautiful, and we did all the photos ourselves, and she's very, very clever.
Amazing.
Yeah, she's great.
Thanks to Jill Dahan for this book
so
and for sharing so much of it with us today. This has been Who's Talking? D.G. Martin. I'll be back here before you know it.